The bulb Samantha Mycroft was trying to replace was just above her reach. She swore softly, and then felt guilty. It was Christmas Eve. One was not supposed to swear on Christmas Eve. In the front yard, next to the tall and beautiful pine she was trying to decorate, the motion-activated Santa was singing in Bing Crosby's voice, cheerfully telling the story of the little drummer boy. She should not be cursing on Christmas Eve, she thought again. But, she thought, pausing to look at the sky, this was a most unusual Christmas Eve. It was dark. Darkness was to be expected at night, of course. But the darkness had started coming earlier and earlier. At first it had been natural, as fall had come to Salem. But 4 in the afternoon had become 2. And where at first the sun had come out at 6 in the morning, 6 had become 7. Then 8. Then 9. Finally, there had been just an hour of light at mid-afternoon. And today, Christmas Eve, she wondered if even that hour would come, because it had gone from being 1 hour to 50 minutes, then 40, then 30. They kept the Christmas lights on 24/7, which, Samantha was convinced, was why her never-burn-out Christmas lights were burning out. She managed to reach the offending bulb and change it, and then, from her perch atop the ladder, looked up at the sky again. The news, of course, was filled with the phenomenon. It was centered on Salem, but it had begun spreading, though to a lesser degree, south toward Boston and north toward the Gloucester area. None of the rest of the country was any darker than it normally was at this time of year. Naturally, scientists and meteorologists were having a field day with the situation. They all had theories that explained what was going on, from the extremely esoteric to a strange type of sun flare. How a flare could cause such darkness, Sam didn't know. It didn't matter. Their theories were all wrong. She knew that much. Whatever was going on in Salem was being caused by a miscreant in the other world. Hey, pretty lights. She heard the deep voice, and for a moment she froze. She knew that voice, though she hadn't heard it in years. It was rich and fluid. It had made her laugh. And its absence from her life had, once upon a time, made her cry. She turned quickly, then remembered that she was on a ladder and grasped hold of it, absolutely determined that she wouldn't humiliate herself by falling off and landing at his feet. With all the control she could muster, she turned regally to look down. Maybe she was imagining that it was him. He had disappeared on a Christmas Eve exactly 2 years ago now. She'd imagined nothing. There he was, Daniel Riverton in the flesh. As if on cue, the stupid Santa began singing, "I'll be home for Christmas." Daniel was tall and appeared lean, but she knew from experience that his shoulders were broad, his chest and arms muscled and honed, and he could move with incredible grace, speed, and agility. He was the epitome of tall, dark, and handsome. Naturally. Because Daniel was a vampire. And an exceptional one. He was striking as only a vampire could be. His hair was coal dark, and his eyes were that burning, intense hazel often seen among his kind. When he was passionate or angry, the hazel burned with a golden light that seemed more intense than the sun. He looked up at her now, those eyes of his enigmatic, a slight smile curving his lips. Leave it to Daniel to come back smiling. She wanted to smack him, smack that smile from his face. And she also wanted to touch him, feel his arms around her again, look up at him and smile and laugh, because they were a duo, soulmates. Yeah, so much for that. How are you, Sam? He asked softly. Fine. What are you doing back in Salem? She demanded curtly. It would have been nice if he'd said something like, I tried to survive without you, but I couldn't. I had to come back to Salem. I don't care about rules or regulations, or if we're damned for all time. I can't live without you.